Chapter 54, Mamma Bhuta Pasanta. 남실이 타마스의 준비되시면 맞다 할게. 남자들처럼 one demonstration, one more business, and simply situated realizes the supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never relents or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains the pure devotional service unto me. Devotional service is actual liberation. When one is subjected to the beauty of the supreme personality of Godhead and his mind is always engaged in the Lord's lotus feet, he is no longer interested in subjects that do not help him in self-realization. In other words, he loses all attraction for material activities. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7, it is said, Esha hi eva nandayati yada hi eva esha etasmin na drishye natme anirute nilayane bhayan pratistham vindate thaso bhayan gato bhavati. A living entity becomes established in spiritual blissful life when he fully understands that his happiness depends on his spiritual self-realization, which is the basic principle of ananda, bliss. And when he is attentively situated in the service of the Lord, who has no other Lord above him. Om Jnanati Brahmasya Jnananjana Shakaya Chakshur Nirtam Yena Asmaye Shri Guruve Namah Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Ti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara
Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So at the moment, we'll just see how this verse fits into the current episode. At the moment, Srila Goswami is telling Parikshit Maharaj about the structure of the Bhumandala. And for the last few months, we have been seeing Srila Goswami explaining to Parikshit Maharaj that the Bhumandala has got 7 islands. And one of the 7 islands is called Jambudvipa. And that is what we are in, the island of Jambudvipa. So there are 7 islands, and within that 7, in one of the 7 islands is called Jambudvipa. In Jambudvipa there are 9 varshas, or 9 divisions of land. One of that division of land is Bharatvarsha. So presently we are talking about Bharatvarsha. So in each of those varshas, in each of those divisions of land, the 9 of them, there are 9 presiding deities, and there are 9 key inhabitants. So each of those key inhabitants have been obtained grace to the presiding deity of that particular island. At the moment, until text number 14 or 15-ish, we saw various prayers concluding. The 9th prayer and the final prayer also concluded. The 9th prayer was offered by Narad Muni to the presiding deity of that particular varsha, and that was Nal Narayan Rishi. So that concluded at text number 15. So today we are at text number 20. So, if the 9, given that the 9 prayers were concluded, then what has happened from text number 16 to 20? Let's quickly recap, that sets the scene, and then we'll zoom into the today's purport and overlaps. So after explaining the 9 prayers by the 9 key inhabitants of those 9 particular islands, in 16, Sukadeva Goswami continued to describe a little bit more the structural formation of the Jambudvipa. So, here he said in 16, text number 16, he said that there are various mountains in this particular varsha, such as the Mahindra mountain that is famous in the Ramayana pastime, then the Govardhan hill that is famous, of course, for us. And then in 17 and 18, after describing the mountains in 16, in 17 and 18, he described the various rivers. Why? Because rivers have their source in the mountains, when the mountains give birth to rivers. So he described various rivers, such as Mother Yamuna, Kaveri, then Godavari, all those rivers that he mentioned in text number 17 and 18. Then in 19 he mentioned, and this is when we not thinking about the Buddha's context. In 19, he mentions about the various inheritance of that varsha. And then he mentions that the inheritance of that varsha, which is by the way us, welcome to us, he mentions that they take birth in that particular varsha according to their past karma. And according to their karma subsequent to their birth will determine their destination, which can be hellish planets, or which can be human, or which can be heavenly planets. So we can go up and down like that merry-go-round, you know, sometimes going up, sometimes coming down. Abhamma-bhavana-loka. Like, so we go up and down. Then the natural question that comes out of there is, well, if we are continuously going up and down in the cycle of going to upper planets, going to lower planets, and then being trapped here, then what is the way out? What is the form of liberation for the inheritance of that varsha? So then in response to that question, text number 20 is what we read today, and I'll read the translation again because then you can see the thread. What is text number 20 saying? So very quickly, 16 describes the mountain, 17 was about the rivers, 18 is about the inheritance taking birth according to their karma, and then 17 and 18 was rivers, 19 was inheritance, 20 is about the liberation of this inheritance in the varsha. So what is the form of liberation? We'll read the translation again. After many, many births. Remember this, what does this strike when we say after many, many births? What verse comes to mind from Bhagavad Gita?
Bahunam
Janmanam Janyanam Prabandhyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatmasu Durlabha. So after many, many births, so this is the inheritance of this varsha. After many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities, and remember this, when the results of one's pious activities, the punya or the adhyatsukriti, and we'll talk mainly about this today, the piety. In the Agyatsukriti. When one's pious activities mature, one gets the opportunity to associate with pure devotees. So what happens after Agyatsukriti? We get association of the pure devotees. Right? And then once we get association of the pure devotees, then what happens? Then one is able to cut the knot of the bondage to ignorance which bound him because of very fruitive activities. Those karma that was binding him is now cut in the association of the pure devotees. Then what happens as a result of associating with such pure devotees, one gradually renders service to the Lord Vasudeva. So firstly there is Shraddha, then Sadhu Sangha, then Bhajan Kriya. So when Sadhu Sangha happens, then Bhajan Kriya will happen, and then Anantarmati, and then so on, right? Who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That yoga, that bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, is the real path of liberation. So there are paths of liberation for the inhabitants of this varsha, but the real path of liberation is what? Bhakti Yoga. And Prabhupada picks up exactly that. I'll give the first few sentences of Prabhupada's opportunity. Prabhupada's. So because the verse is talking about liberation, Prabhupada's. Brahman realization is the beginning of liberation. So Prabhupada talks about three types of liberation, or three stages of liberation. First is Brahman realization, and Paramatma realization is still further advanced. Then Prabhupada uses this word. Towards the revolution. Then Prabhupada says, but one achieves real liberation. Prabhupada is so clear with this terminology, yeah? The real liberation when he understands his position as an eternal servant of Supreme Personality of God and Jivara Sarupahoy, Krishna Nityanas. That is the Krishna Nityanas. That is the real liberation Prabhupada is. So here we see the condition of the Jiva, of the soul, from the piety to purity, because Bhakti Yoga entails us being pure devotees for the pure Krishna, all attractive, all pure Krishna. So how do we journey from piety to purity is what I'm going to discuss today. And of course, needless to say that I'm nowhere close to being pure, but Prabhupada has given us the mana, the path towards which we can at least hope to become pure one day, among this purificatory process of Bhakti Yoga. So of course I'm not pure, but I can talk about what I had in reading in our wonderful scriptures. So let's start with piety. A lot of times piety gets confused and misunderstood with purity, and it also gets extended and misunderstood with spirituality. So piety, purity and spirituality are three different things. Let's understand them before we understand how we can attain purity. So what is piety? Before we can understand what is piety, let's understand what is impiety. That's pretty easy. We are probably more familiar with impiety. Impiety definitely has got its gross as well as its subtle aspect. The demoniac characterizes the impiety. That is pretty clear, no? Such as meat-eating, intoxication, sex, gambling, killing others, terrorism. These are all gross symptoms of being impious. So when we talk about pious people, we are talking about those who at least are not partaking in the gross demoniac activities, such as terrorism and all those things, yeah? Or killing people, killing animals and all those things. Those grossly miscreants, no, those are at least not there in these pious people. So they are at least pious. So therefore, they will be generally situated in the mode of goodness. Maybe that's another way to remember. Now they won't be so much in the mode of ignorance. They may be impatient, but more so towards the mode of goodness. Not Suddha Sattva, but the material mode of goodness they will be situated. Nice, you know, bhajans they will be hearing. They will be doing, you know, possibly waking up early in the morning, eating sattvic food, if not prasadam, at least they will be eating sattvic food. So these are the people who are very old pious. Because remember, this is important. Krishna has said, you know, that if we are unable to complete our bhakti in one lifetime, then we, if we are not able to finish that, or then we take birth in the pious family, or in the family of rich Nakantai, or in the family of transcendentalists. Suchi Nam Sri Matam and Dhi Matam, chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, 6 from the Ashtanga Yoga, yeah? So Suchi Nam Sri Matam and Dhi Matam. Suchi Nam is this pious family that the Lord is talking about. Sri Mata Marga, this family, and then Dhi Mata Marga, transcendental devotees where we can take birth. So if we are unable to finish this, we may take birth in one of these families. So that means a pious family, where it is very conducive for us to restart our Krishna consciousness from the point we left in our last life. So that is the pious family. But the problem, or let's say the limitation in the piety or in the pious family will be that they may have subtle form of bad activities, such as looking forward for pratishtha, puja and pratishtha, you know, power and prestige in the society that we want. This is what the inhibits are of the pious family. So for example, you know, a pious family may be very philanthropic, you know, they will do a lot of charitable donations and all those things. But, and we see this in India, you know, if they donate a bus shelter so that the children are protected before coming to school if there is rain or heat, then the bus shelter should at least have their name on the board in the front, you know, established or constructed in 1988 by, you know, some Suresh Chauhan and family. No offense to Suresh Chauhan, maybe just a name that came to my mind randomly. By Chauhan brothers or something, but you must say. So this is a subtle form of looking for that prestige in the society, that I'm so giving that, you know, my name should be glorified. So they are biased, but that subtle self-centeredness is there. That's different from our spiritual progress when we try to, you know, not to harbor any of this kind of subtle anarthas as well. So that's piety, right? You know, that's piety. Now, what is purity? So if we contrast piety with purity, purity in simple words will be decreasing our attraction to anything that is impure. Purity in a simple words is decreasing our attachment and attraction to the point of zero to those things that are impure. Materially speaking, not impure. Now that is half of the definition then. Because if someone is able to achieve this, complete, you know, nullification of everything that is materially attractive, those material attractions, if we can make it to zero, then that is not, doesn't mean we are spiritual anymore, correct? But that means we are just probably like, let's say like Buddhist, you know, who is fire or nirvana, or like the impersonalist, Brahmavadis, because for them material attraction is also become zero to the point in time, but that's not a pure devotional service. So for us, there's two links of purity definition. First is a reduction to the point of zero of anything that is impure to be able to be purity, become purity. And the second aspect, which is more important for us, is constant increasing of anything that is purely spiritual to the point of 100% concentration on the old pure Krishna. Constant, regular decreasing of anything that is impure and then constant increasing to everything that is pure, to the point of ultimate condensed concentration on the all pure Krishna. That is purity. When we say pure devotees, we mean to say that the only thought in their mind is about the all pure Krishna, nothing else. That is the definition of a pure devotee. So even if they are utilizing the metta, even in the metta they see Krishna. No, they spiritualize whatever is material. So that's the definition of purity. So on the same note, that impurity will be that thing that takes us away from the Lord. Impurity in a simple word would be the jiva trying to enjoy in separation to Krishna. The jiva trying to enjoy impure things in separation to the pure Krishna. There will be a definition of impurity. Yeah? So clear so far? Piety and impurity, you know, what is piety and impurity, where do we go to mark? Now then it takes us to the next question is, well, what is so bad about being impure? What is the problem with somebody who is impure? When we sit at home continuously on the chair, working from home and not coming to the temple for bhagavatam classes and hearing and all that, you know, and not sitting in kirtan and all that, all of a sudden it's just so difficult, to be honest, to be sitting in this asana, like what I'm feeling it. So anyway, so what does it say? So what is the problem with being impure? The problem with being impure is that almost against our will, it drags us to our daily downfall destruction. Just as, now I'll give you an energy and I'll come back to this point. A butcherman, he drags the animal towards the chamber, the slaughterhouse, to chop his neck off, so forcefully against the will of the animal. He drags it. That is, being dragged means his will. So those impure thoughts in our mind, what they do, they drag us towards our death, towards our downfall, towards our destruction. Almost like against our will, our pure will. Now, how does the butcherman drag the animal? The butcherman puts the rope around the animal's neck and drags the animal with the power. If the animal is very powerful, then the rope has to be very powerful as well. Rope has to be strong, and the person who is pulling the rope and the animal has to be powerful as well. Now, in our case, when I say our case, in my case, neither the rope nor the pull has to be very strong. A lot of times, a very small amount of impure thoughts can pull us. I don't know whether you have this realization or not, but I have, you know, a subtle, very, very, very subtle impure pull, impure thought, very subtly and very less forcefully can pull us towards our downfall. And by the way, we can be bound by three ropes. The animal is bound by one rope generally. We are bound by three ropes, which is Satoguna, Rajoguna, and Tamoguna, mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. All those three ropes are pulling us. Sometimes the one guna is more predominant than the other, and it just keeps pulling us towards our downfall. And if we are not careful and vigilant, then one of those ropes, even with a small pull, can pull us down completely. That is the force of mind. And then after we get pulled, then we realize that, oh my God, what did I do? Ajamila went through this, exactly the same pull. Just a small sight of, you know, a man and a woman embracing each other illicitly in public, although he was such a nice cultured Brahmana, just a small sight, tantalized his senses, and then before we know, you know, he is fallen all the way down. For us, it could be a billboard on the road. It could be something on the trend that we are seeing that's obnoxious. It could be something that pops up on our, you know, smartphone. We are watching nice kirtan and something pops up to say, you know, get attracted to this. Before we know, we have started watching some show or some movie or something, you know, completely distracted without much endeavor at all. And then, so this is the problem with impure thoughts. It can just pull us in, pull us down. So with that, then Prabhupada brings this, quotes this verse in text number 20, which was stay with me. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na sochati na kamchati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mat bhakti na bhate param. Why does Prabhupada quote this verse? Because Prabhupada explains that for us to be progressing from impurity to purity, we have to come to a platform of Brahma Buddha. In other words, we have to come to the platform of spirituality. Because spirituality is almost like a byproduct of spirituality. When you become spiritual, as you are becoming spiritually advanced towards Krishna, then purification is a product that naturally comes out of it. Of course, we try to be pure to a personal world, and the output of that is also purity. So it goes hand in hand. Spirituality and purity goes hand in hand. So when we are at the Brahma Bhuta platform, in the spiritual platform, then finding those impure, impious thoughts are very easy. For example, our body is a city of 9 gate, we know it. So if any material city is attacked by hooligans or by the opposition army, and we see this literally happening in Kabul, in Afghanistan, we are all familiar with this news, I presume. So if they are what is happening, when the two army forces of the Taliban and of the ISF, the allied forces dominated by US, when they are fighting, if both of the forces are at the ground level at the airport, then it is quite difficult for one force to overtake the other because they are at the same level. But what they do, what the army contingents do, if they are unable to sustain the attack of the other force when both are at the same level, one tries to rise. When one tries to rise to the higher grounds, such as to the hills or the mountains, or definitely the air forces, when they take air forces as the wave of their raining, then it gives them much more power all of a sudden to attack the lower forces. So the force itself may not have changed, but the strength of the force itself may not have changed. But just a slight difference in the strategy of elevating themselves to the higher platform immediately makes them more powerful, and then they are able to withstand and counter the force that is at the ground level. Similarly, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma means that if we are, given that we always struggle to fight with our impious, impure thoughts coming in our mind, like incessant flow of water into the ocean, then if we just raise our consciousness to a higher platform, then from there onwards, fighting these lower modes of thoughts will become more and more easier. And definitely we have this realization in our Krishna consciousness path, that when we become, when we come to the temple, when we associate with devotees, when we reach Bhagavatam, when we eat prasadam, when we sing kirtan, and all those things makes it much more easier to fight the impious, impure thoughts. But doing it on our own, and Krishna is speaking in lockdown, I find it quite challenging now. The thoughts that come into my mind, and I had this bad experience recently as well. A slight provocation of anger, I reacted so gravely against somebody that I am sure that I would have not done that in my pre-COVID days. When you constantly come to the temple, take darshan of the Lord, associate with devotees, I think I am having the realization now that it has set me so well that, of course, I won't say that I was never getting angry, but definitely the extent to which I would retaliate would have been much, much more sober and controlled. But in the past 4-5 weeks, when I was challenged with this situation, I completely regret the way I reacted. And then I was just checking myself that why did I react like this? This is, reacting in anger is definitely undevotee-like, non-devotee-like. But reacting so badly is definitely, almost it is such a demonian. So why did I fall for this trap? So I was checking my own self and I realized that, oh my God, how much I'm missing the congregational get-together and the empowerment and enrichment that is there in devotee association is just invaluable to me. And as a Vedasa, I can see that when I don't have access to the temple as much as I definitely had before. So then I started when I was faced with this, that raise our consciousness to fight this force that come in our mind. Then I thought, okay, what is the plan? What plan can I have that I can not just have a theoretical plan for writing it in an exam or something, but what do I practically have as a checkpoint next time when I'm challenged with the same situation? Because he said, the definition of stupidity is to expect a different outcome when you do the same thing second time. If you keep doing the same thing second time, the same outcome will happen. But a stupid person thinks that the outcome may be different. So then I don't want to be like that. I want to be somebody at least who can know that I will react differently when I'm challenged with the same situation again. So I did some more research and I found this in one of the articles that I was reading from Chaitanya Prabhu, so all praise to him. And he said, to fight this, you could have a plan of different words starting with letter, such as fear. You fear it, you find it, you fight it, and then you finish it. And I'll explain about this, yeah? You fear it, you find it, you fight it, and then you finish it. So there is four letters with letter right here. So you fear it. Basically, you have to fear that the impure thoughts are disastrous to us. Especially we have to fear it. Because if somebody doesn't fear it, there are people who actually like to be angry. Because it makes them think that they are more powerful and predominating the others. And you see this, sometimes in the bosses, the leaders and the managers, they want to be very powerful. So they like to be angry always. In the morning if you say, good morning, sir. Good morning, That's how they will react. With a little bit of grumpiness in their sound. They enjoy it. People like it. But for the devotees, we have to fear that these things will especially lead to our downfall before we can think about anybody else. So this anantas we have to fear. Once we fear it, then Chaitanya Prabhu said that you find it. And where do you find them? Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that Indriyani Manobuddhi, lust resides in mind, senses and intelligence. Indriyani Manobuddhi, you know it is there. But just knowing that it is there, if you find it, that the senses and the mind and the intelligence are the harbor of these bad thoughts, is not enough, because for our own personal plan, and this is very important for me, and I hope it can be taken for yourself, our personal plan has to be there. Okay, we know theoretically it is there, but what is that particular impure thought that is bothering me the most? Is it anger? Is it lust? Is it prestige? Or is it power? Or is it fame? What is that that's bothering? I know most of these things will be bothering us to some extent or the other. But what is the one that is the most bothering factor in my own sadhana? So I have to fear it and find it, and find it specifically in our face. What is that I'm going to work on the most in the next few days? And especially for us, tomorrow is Janmashtami. So which is that particular thought that is I'm going to work on tomorrow in our personal sub-plane from there? So fear it and then fight it. Find it. And then fight it. And Chaitanya Prabhu said that if we don't fight it, let me rephrase. What he said is, if we fight it, we may not necessarily be winning the war. This got me tricked again. He said, if we fight it, that does not mean that we are going to win against the force of Maya. But if we don't fight it, then we are guaranteed to lose. Interesting, yeah? If we fight, we may not be winning eventually, we may not be winning momentarily, but eventually we will, hopefully, by Krishna's mercy. But if we don't, then we are guaranteed to lose. So better to fight it and perhaps lose time to time and then keep fighting rather than throwing the towel and not being able to march forward towards the whole powerful pure Krishna at all. Yeah? So we have to fight it. And then once we have fought it enough, eventually with our endeavor and top with it Krishna's mercy, we will eventually finish it off. A time will come when all these anarthas will eventually finish and then we will become all pure devotees. So find it, fear it, find it, fight it, and then finish it off. And Prabhupada said, finish it off in one lifetime. Finish it off in one lifetime. Which is quite interesting, because actually when you look at the verses from tomorrow, from tomorrow onwards, for the next 5 or 6 verses, what continues, so after the 9 prayers have been finished, and the structural definition of description of the varsha is given in terms of the mountain, rivers and the inhabitants, and what is the solution for the liberation of the inhabitants, which is what we are doing today. The next 9 or 10 verses is about the demigods glorifying this particular varsha. The demigods glorifying this particular piece of land, Bharat Varsha. Why? And the demigods are saying, they start talking about their time duration, literally. You say, we live for one kalpa of Brahma. Now, what is one kalpa of Brahma? One kalpa of Brahma is one day of Brahma. That is equal to one Chaturyuga, which is the 4.3 million of our Chaturyuga multiplied by 1,000. We know that Treta Yuga goes for 482,000 years. Multiply that by 2 becomes Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, and then you triple the Kali Yuga, which is 400 times 3, 1.2 million years, is Dwapar Yuga. in 482, Kaliyuga multiplied by 4 is 1.6, 1.7 million years of Satyuga. So you add all this together, the 4 million plus the 400,000, the 800,000, the 1200,000, and then the 1600,000 becomes 4.3 million years of years. And those 4.3 million years is called one Chaturyuga or one Divya Yuga. So 4.3 million years multiplied by 1000 becomes one day of Brahma, and that is one kalpa of Brahma, we say. So the demigods are saying in the next few verses that we live for one kalpa of Brahma, because after that they undergo through the process of the partial annihilation. So they're saying we live for so many years, and look at this inhabitants in Bharat Varsha, they live only for 100 years maximum, if they have lucky. And they can get liberation, they can get bhakti and become old people and go back to God in such a short span of time. What is the point in our lifetime when we could easily become, you know, human beings and get liberated? So they are glorifying the inhabitants of the Bharat Varsha as well as the purificatory process that is in Bharat Varsha for them to become old piva, to reach the old piva, for them to become piva devotee. So they want to take birth as human beings. This will be the katha for the next week or so about the demigod's time. So on that note, tomorrow is Krishna Jamasmi. All of us want to become, you know, pure devotees of the Lord. I think all of us probably will agree as well to become pure devotees by tomorrow. Might be quite challenging because we have tried this for the last 10 years. And definitely we have advanced, but we have not possibly reached the point of 100% yet. But a journey of 1000 steps starts with the first. And tomorrow we can take that one big step on Janmasmi Day to beg the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our beloved Krishna. Tomorrow being his appearance there, when he is more merciful, beg for his blessings so that he can shower them onto us and we can march 1000 miles to him. So the Lord is not necessarily seeing whether we are old, pure or not in the moment. What he is seeing in us, in me, is that whether we are actually even endeavoring to become sincere and pure. If that sincere endeavor is there, then he can do magic in our life. So we have to become sincere in trying to become old, pure. And then the Lord will reciprocate for us. Because tomorrow is Paritranaya Sadhuna, Vinashaya Chadushritam, Dharma Samstapanathaya Sambhavami Yoge. The Lord appears for three reasons. Paritranaya Sadhuna and Vinashaya Chadushritam. So we can think of this Vinashaya Chadushritam. Oh my Lord, please kill all these impure, impious thoughts in my mind. Kill this demoniac mentality in my mind. And that is exactly why you appear, one of the reasons. And please save me, Paritranaya Sadhuna. You know, I beg to you on this auspicious day. Please save me so that we can become all pure. And Prabhupada said that purity is the force. So if we can endeavor to become pure, then with that pure force we can not only save ourselves, but we can also save others, especially on days like tomorrow when we can go and preach. But our preaching can only be effective if we have that kind of purity in us. Otherwise we can preach, but the transformation in the heart of the other person will not happen so much unless we preach with force. Or preach with purity, there is a force. Okay, so I will come here. This is Janmasthami. I know there is a lot of other services going on. I will stop it here today. If you have any comments, questions or corrections, then please look for your
next. Just a comment.
Just maybe the mic. Yeah.
This reminded me of that verse that Prahlada Maharaj prays. The one when you said, pray to Krishna to remove the impurity, then Prahlada Maharaj also says that famous prayer, you know, Namo Bhagavata Narasimhaya, please kill the demonic.
Very nice. And that's probably another good thing to do tomorrow, no? Before all these nice verses, that talks about purity. So from piety is good, but purity is required to boost the piety so that you can become spiritual. Anything else?
Jesus has a comment.
Just want to give it to my name.
It's in regards to the concept of purity. As you said, it's more trying to avoid the impurity, impure things. So I was trying to analyze what actually means be impure or clean. based on Prabhupada's purpose, for example, it's clearly defined that to the sense of trying to enjoy the nature and be the controller, a self-centered tendency, it's the impurity. And when, as you probably mentioned, if we focus more in Krishna's pleasure, trying to orient our activities, how to satisfy Krishna, less self-centered, yeah, purity is manifested.
Correct.
And so avoiding or eradicating the tendency of being the enjoyer and controller. And then also that can be applied in our perception and relationship with others as well.
Yeah. A very good condition. Trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, and when we know that, you know, when we try to enjoy separately from Krishna, then neither the enjoyment comes, but in return what we get is more miseries. And then the second point you made is, you know, our dealings and our engagements and relationships with others also may not be best because we are self-centered rather than Krishna-centered. And actually if we explore that best for what it goes, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atmana Shoshati Na Kamsati Sama Sarveshya Bhuteshu Man Bhaktim Lavate Para. Then what does that mean? That Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma, that Atma who is situated in the spiritual platform, Brahma Bhuta, now Shoshati Na Kamsati. So he doesn't have any Shosh nor any Kamsati. In other words, he doesn't have any lamentation nor he has any hankering or craving. So he is satisfied with what he has got. So not that, oh, I don't have this and he has it, so I'm envious. I don't have this, why am I not getting this? God doesn't exist. So he's jealous towards the Lord. So all those, you know, lamentations and all those cravings are there conditioning. Lamentation for what we have lost, our near and dear ones, our possessions, and cravings for what we want in the future. We want to accumulate more and more and more. But for this person who is in a Brahma Bhuta platform, na sochati na kamsati, no lamentation, no hindrance, no failings. And in terms of his dealings with others, sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Of all living entities, he sees them equally, you know, as children of God and the Paramatma residing in their heart. So when he sees that everything is spiritual oriented, then again there is no tension in relationships. So with people, he is equal. With things, he is neither lamenting nor hindering. So very, very equal voice, meditating on the Lord's Vasudeva form. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatmasu Durvala. Such a soul is very rare. Thank you very much, Mr.
If you should have another point that I wanted to ask is really, well, first I want to thank you so much for the class and also sharing that technique that Chaitanya Charitamrita presented about the fear, finding, fighting, and finishing.
Yeah.
I wonder if that can be applied to different. Not just to fear, but of different other non-favorable bad tendencies that we have. And if that finding process can be more related to the self-introspection,
yeah,
or but also because our tendency of deceiving ourselves can be complemented with, for example, input of feedback from others, asking for feedback.
Yeah.
That finding can be in
another way? 100%. The finding can be personal, our time to sit down and meditate on what's wrong with me, and especially in devotee association. Finding internal introspection is important because devotees generally tend to glorify us much more than what we are devoting. Oh, Prabhuji, you know, such a nice prasadam, such a nice lecture, such a nice lecture. Devotees like to glorify other devotees. And that is good. But if you want to be a little sincere and serious, then yeah, self-introspection and then cross-checking with those that we trust, like our mentors, our Guru Maharajas, you know, our senior devotees, to say, this happened and why is this happening? Can you direct me? So, both finding it can be in many ways. Sometimes when you read Prabhupada's purports, we find it. That, oh my God, this is my life story. It's talking about me only. If you read a lifetime, it's like, yeah, like it's like me. No, why is this happening to me? So then within the purport there could be answers that tells us why we are so, and what's the solution. And every, almost every purport Prabhupada gives the solution somehow. So all these things we can be implemented, and that will eventually help us much for
Prabhu, the word initiate, you know, that's like with question mark. Yes. Can find really can fear, find and fight it as well, I guess. Fighting is more like addressing it and how to overcome it or whatever maybe. But there are different urges of the body and mind. These are, if you can overcome these urges, then Prabhu Goswami says you can make this happen all over the world. So, you know, the word initiate for me is like, how does that work? It's,
I had the same thoughts when I read it. Fearing, finding and fighting, I could say, okay, I can try. Finish it, I know, and that's when I say it. So I think the fearing, finding and fighting is our endeavor. I would, in my personal plan, I would have it as my endeavor. And finish it, I will leave it to the Lord. Because I need your help, I can't do it alone. But if I do three, at least you do one right. that is your resolution to me. So finishing is, I agree, it's hard. But it's not impossible. We know through our shastras is not impossible. So I think if you can, as Prabhupada said, you work, you get to 70-80% and I'll take care of the neck, but the rest of it through the back door. So thank God we have got the back door policy, so Prabhupada will take us around here, even if it's not finished. But he's also said finish it in this lifetime. So with that 80% endeavor from us and then 20% mercy from Prabhupada and Krishna, then we will finish it.
Yeah, that's right, it's the endeavor and
the
mercy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And another thing was that I was thinking, so this is in my personal plan. You know, there's a saying that if you aim for the bullseye and if you miss it, you need to hit the target. But if you aim for the target, you might hit outside the circle, yeah? So at least aim for the target, finish it. And if you don't, then maybe we are somewhere within the circle of Krishna consciousness. So that could be, you know, it's always good to aim for high.
So finish it can also mean more like dovetailing those urges or tendencies. That's more not finish it, okay, that's
good. Yeah, it's true. It's a good point because doesn't mean everything is coming from Krishna. So it's just utilizing the Krishna service, the best use of everything. That's right.
Yeah.
Good point.
Dr. Yoga, thanks for Krishna. And especially Guru, nice that you reset. I think now nice if we have discussed so much about that prayer. I think literally put it, you know, into some kind of writing and tomorrow offer it to the Lord to say this is my personal plan and I can work on the three and please help me with the fourth one. And come back to him, you know, in 1 year's time to say how did I go and then take it from there, something like that. Something more practical. Okay. Anything else? No? Thank you so much for those participation that made it more lively. Thank you. Nanda Sharan Mahanan Vijay 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 Sharan Mahanan Vijay